listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show, Outsmart Emotional Eating. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in food psychology, and I am here to help you break free from binge eating, body shame, and diets that don't work. So let me ask you something. Have you ever felt as if you are stuck in an endless cycle of dieting and binge eating and that there is no way out? Well, let me tell you, there is always hope for change. And today we have a very special guest who knows this all too well. She has been in your shoes before, and she's created lasting change in her life. And she's here to share her story and give us some awesome tips on how to break free from the diet binge cycle and find true fulfillment. Braca Goetz is the Harvard-educated author of 41 books that help children's souls shine. And she's also written a candid memoir for adults. If you're watching this or if you're on Instagram, here it is. We'll tell you more about this later. This memoir is about how she joyfully and spiritually overcame binge eating and restrictive dieting. So welcome, Braca. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here with you. Thank you.
You know, I just want to start by reading something from your book. This is from a poem you wrote. This is part of the poem is called One More Potato Chip. And this is part of the poem, Help! I'm trapped inside this body. I'm a prisoner of war. One chocolate chip cookie, two chocolate chip cookies. I can finish up the box if no one is looking. I've got this hunger. It's such a hunger. But when that piece of cake is gone, it's even stronger. While gobbling up the food, I'm just in the most delightful mood. But when it's over, oh, when it's over, the emptiness I tried to bury is uncovered. When will I give in and realize it's not my stomach that is hungry? What is starving is my soul. So powerful. So, you know, tell us, how did you go from trying to symbolically, you know, feed your soul or, you know, ignore the starving of your soul to the place where you are now, which is really free and liberated from binge eating and restrictive eating?
Thank you so much. Thank you for resonating with that poem too. It was a great journey. It didn't feel great when it was happening at all. It was like a cage that was getting smaller and smaller. That's how I felt. The binge eating was the most frightening part, where I felt so completely out of control. And that was followed by very restrictive dieting, so that from the outside, nobody could tell how I was suffering. Nobody had any idea, unless I told them, what I was going through. And it was taking up more and more of my energy, my mental capacity. I could barely concentrate by when I reached my lowest point with the extreme binge eating and extreme dieting, fluctuating between one or the other. So I didn't know where this insatiable hunger was coming from. Why did I feel so empty inside? I had no idea. But meanwhile, for years, I was searching. What's the purpose to life? I went searching for meaning, and I found little pieces of it, but it did not fill my soul. It didn't give me the nourishment I was craving. In fact, at Harvard, as an undergraduate, I became the expert on eating disordered behavior. I'd give talks. I wrote a chapter in an anthology that's still being used in women's studies courses. I was focusing on that, and I was getting sicker and sicker. So the intellectual understanding was not enough. What I finally discovered is that I didn't know what was starving, but it was my soul that was starving. That emptiness could not be filled by everything I was trying to stuff into it. And the way I see it is, when we're overeating, we're looking for lasting pleasure. We feel a scarcity of pleasure in our lives, so we just keep going because the food gives us immediate pleasure. When we experience that pleasure, we're like, oh, okay, then I'll just keep putting in more and more food because I want the pleasure to keep lasting. So what changed my life was find out really ancient mystical wisdom about what brings lasting pleasure in life. Once I understood that, then there was no longer this sense of scarcity, and I could recognize the abundance of ways to bring pleasure into my life at any moment, so I didn't have to be stuck on food as my source of bringing pleasure in.
Sometimes it's also not only about pleasure, it's about the absence of pain. Because when we're binging or we're thinking about food, we're not experiencing the pain of our thoughts or our wishes or our emotions.
Yes. So it covers up that hole. And there was a Rabbi Noach Weinberg, who taught me all about the pleasure ladder. And he would say, what's the opposite of pain? And people would think it's pleasure. But just like you said, the opposite of pain is comfort. The food brings immediate comfort, and we don't really experience the great pleasure that's possible because we're not really even enjoying the food when we're having a binge like that. We're not experiencing it with mindful gratitude at all. We're just trying to cover up the pain. That's exactly what we're doing. And we're actually, we put on layers and layers, you know, of protection as we get deeper and deeper into that, so that, like, we numb the pain, we're not feeling the pain, and we learn these coping mechanisms that cover it up so we never experience the pain. We run from the pain, and we also don't experience real pleasure in life, the really deep pleasure where, like you said, it's really a comfort feeling. It was designed, like, the natural foods are designed to give us real pleasure in life. But when we use them in a coping mechanism kind of way, then we're just giving ourselves comfort. We're not really experiencing the mindful gratitude that this was designed to give us, like experiencing how the natural foods, like a fruit becomes bright and beautiful. It's ready. Before that, it's like green and camouflaged in with the leaves. So it's designed to be beautiful to look at, to smell, to taste. And then it's got, like, you know, the peel to keep the sweet juiciness in for months. It's like an amazingly individually packaged. And inside that are the seeds of eternity. It becomes a tree. It becomes endless more oranges. These things were designed to give us tremendous mindful pleasure when we experience them. But instead, we kind of misuse them in coping mechanisms, ways to get that immediate fix, which just covers up the pain, gives us comfort, and we don't get that intense pleasure that is inherent in it, that it was designed to give us.
Yeah, we don't enjoy food when we're binging on it. Food is the best friend and the worst enemy.
Right.
And in the book, you are really so candid and, I think, courageous in sharing the depths to which you went, which a lot of people can really relate to, the depths to which you went to escape the pain. You talk about when you were in med school in, is it South Carolina, North Carolina?
I made that up. I changed certain places.
Okay. Names. You're in med school. Very different from where you grew up. And you talked about stealing food from your roommates, or looking in the trash to find the old food. Like, you were really bravely and so in so raw a manner articulating the desperation of, and by the way, the book that I'm talking about, because people are asking about this, it's called Searching for God in the Garbage. And you can find it on Amazon and on Rocha's website, which we'll share at the end. But so you mentioned the pleasure ladder. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I love this because it gives a real structure, a clear framework to what are all the abundant pleasures that we could bring into our lives. It has five levels on the pleasure ladder, five rungs. And what I realize is it corresponds to our hand, five fingers, because it's empowering. We have the ability to bring pleasure, real pleasure, genuine pleasure into our lives at any moment. It's not dependent on anybody else. That's the amazing thing that changed my life. So there's five levels. And these five levels also, in ancient mystical wisdom, they correspond to the five levels of the human soul. So the lowest level is physical. The lowest level on the pleasure ladder corresponds to our body. It's all the natural physical pleasures that are designed to give us real pleasure, like the natural foods, the whole foods, being in nature, movement, dancing, swimming, gardening, you know, yoga, whatever gives you joy. It gives you joy to move. It just does. And all these natural physical pleasures, that's the lowest level of pleasure, but they're available to us at any moment. On my 600-pound life, the people all say the same thing. The only thing bringing me pleasure anymore is food. That's it. They're stuck. But as you said, it's not real pleasure. It's discomfort. That's really what's happening. So the next level up is love. Now, how can love be empowering? You think it's dependent on somebody else. But this definition of love is focusing on the virtues of another. We could do that at any moment. In jail, in solitary confinement, a person could think about a grandmother that once did a kindness for them, and they are filled with a warm emotional feeling of love that can encourage them. We can bring love into our lives at any moment. The person doesn't have to be there. We focus on their virtues. The next level up is meaning. Each level up brings a more lasting pleasure and a deeper connection, because why are we stuck in these binges or over? We feel disconnection, estrangement, loneliness, boredom, anxiety, depression. These are the things that we've learned from childhood to stuff our faces, get immediate comfort, and cover that stuff up, you know? But here's how we can actually nourish our hungry souls: with connecting to something natural in our environment, connecting to what we appreciate about someone else, or even better, doing something meaningful. I don't want to say better. I want to say what brings even a more lasting pleasure: doing something meaningful. I was on another show and I got up to this point, and the podcast host, he said, yeah, he ate two slices of pizza. He was by himself and he was going to plow through the whole box of pizza by himself. Somebody knocks on his door. His neighbor needs his help with something. He helps him for a couple of minutes, comes back, sees the pizza, puts it in the fridge. He no longer needed to stuff his face anymore. What filled him up? He just helped somebody, and he didn't need the pizza anymore. It works that amazingly in the moment. And what's even higher than that is creativity. When we put a unique part of ourselves into the world, we don't feel like eating or sleeping. I mean, we're on such a high in that zone of creativity. So and the highest of all is transcendence. That is when you make that crack, you make the first crack in overcoming your pattern of your habit of binge eating or, you know, whatever is that you're stuck on, you do something new. It's the most amazing, liberating feeling. It's when we transcend our own limitations. We become more of who we really are. We become more of our essence, our essential self. And we also connect to everybody and source energy, how we're all connected. It's when the veils of separation kind of ascend and we recognize how we're all connected. So each level up brings more connection, and there's only one price to pay to climb the pleasure ladder, and that price is gratitude. Gratitude is what brings us to each level on the pleasure ladder, whether it's appreciating these natural gifts, appreciating another person, giving back to the world in gratitude. It's that, and that's what fills us up. Gratitude is what fills us, and it's what brings us to a place of connection.
Beautiful. And I should say gratitude not as a way of denying your emotions, because often in our world today, where I can't tell you how many people are told, well, you should be grateful for this or that when they're upset. And I want to just make the distinction that you are not saying that you're weaponized gratitude to deny your painful emotions. Use gratitude to, you know, get in touch with a sense of oneness with the world, with other people, to create meaning. I can't help but thinking of Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, you know, in the meaning part, and just
yes,
that gratitude, so that it almost makes everything more vivid, right? When you have these experiences.
Yes, exactly. My world was drained gray when I was really stuck in that pattern of binge eating versus restrictive dieting. All the colors in life were gone. I felt morally gray. Nothing mattered. My life didn't matter to me. That's really how low it got. And also, everything was done in secret, so no one knew what I was doing. And that was a shameful place to be, filled with shame. Now, it's about celebrating any victory. I want to encourage people. Let's say you eat 10 candy bars instead of 50 candy bars. Just celebrate. Don't feel that, you know, we get down on that shame, but instead celebrate 10 candy bars. You know, whatever you've done, you could have had more. You could have had even more. Celebrate whatever, wherever you're at, you know, and because that takes us to a place of nourishing our souls again. We need more joy in our life, and we can give it to ourselves. So again, I want to reemphasize what you said. It's not about covering up the pain, but like when a person, for instance, has been through trauma or neglect as a child, significant abuse, then, you know, it may not be enough to only nourish your soul, because you have so many layers of protection on top. And that's when people like you are essential, Dr. Nina, because people suffering like that need support. They need someone to help them remove the layers in a careful way so they can feel protected. I'm going to describe it like this. We have a light that's shining. Our souls are shining. But when we go through trauma, you know, layers get put on so we don't even feel our souls shining anymore. And that's when you need therapeutic intervention to help to remove those layers so your soul could be shining again, because it is. It's still in there. It's as resilient as ever. And so it's important, while being helped in a therapeutic way, to also be nourishing your soul so it gets stronger and stronger and your light can shine. Yeah.
That's beautiful. It reminds me of my favorite way to describe therapy is what is using Michelangelo. And he once was asked, how do you turn these great blocks of stone into statues? And he said, I do not turn the stone into statues. I free the statues from the stone.
Yes.
So beautiful. It's not about changing. It's about revealing your true self.
Exactly. Beautifully, beautifully said. Yes.
Well, I think he said it very beautifully, and you said it very beautifully with the light. You know, when we have those layers over our light, we forget we are light. We forget we can't see our light and we can't feel our light. But when we heal,
yes,
then our light shines through.
Exactly,
the statue is revealed, and our authentic selves can be.
Exactly. I just learned this yesterday. I heard that, you know, we don't feel our hearts pumping. We don't feel our lung. We don't feel the heart and the lungs and our muscles until really we start to move them. And it's the same thing with our souls. We're not really in touch with them until they start to revive and move again, you know, and then we could feel that light. Exactly.
And you also had to learn a different way of relating to yourself, right? The love is not just the love that's relational. The love on your pleasure ladder is the love that you have to cultivate for yourself. Can you speak to that part of your process?
Yes, because as I experience real gratitude, that is like one of the greatest acts of self-compassion you can give. Because let's say so many people go around with a feeling of unworthiness and the voices in the head that are being so critical that they heard from childhood or whenever. So when you give to yourself, you are saying, I am a person worthy of all these wonderful pleasures in life. It actually creates a cognitive dissonance. I am giving myself all this. I'm experiencing all this pleasure. I'm a person worthy of pleasure. The more that you keep experiencing this mindful gratitude in a very conscious way, the better you feel about yourself. It's amazing because you recognize you're a person worthy of all this goodness that was really created in life for you to enjoy. That was the change. It was when, actually, it was the rabbi that taught me this years ago explained, I was searching, what's the purpose of life? And he said, the purpose of life is to experience the greatest pleasure possible. I'm like, what? That's not what I expected to hear. That sounds hedonistic. But you get it. This is the greatest pleasure possible. The spiritual pleasures that fill us up with gratitude. This is what we all are really here for in life. Our mission, that's what it is. Our mission is nothing more than to experience gratitude here. Wow, that changes everything. Then we recognize the amazing garden that we're in because we can get so lost from that garden. I was so lost in a concrete world of gray. And now, what could I say, you know? The tree brings me back. You know, I can feel everything now with so much gratitude, recognizing that there's an ultimate good in this world and that we're ultimately good. That changes the whole perspective.
And this is so inspiring and so beautiful. So let me ask you a difficult question, which is, you know, change is not like, it's not like you flip a switch, right? So, what were your stumbling blocks on the road to really truly 100% as you evidently, you know, embody that 100% kind of liberation and gratitude and freedom? What were some of your challenges along the way?
Yes. And I think when you read the book, you probably saw that too. I got it. I understand this, but till you integrate it, it takes time. I would still go on the binges, you know what I mean? It was still happening, not as frequently, but it was still happening. I was still not yet clear, still uncertain about life. Still, it's a sense of trust. Could I really trust that life was here to fill me with pleasure? Until I really trusted that, there were many stumbling blocks, you know. And now, still, I don't go on the binges. That's not happening to me anymore. But let's say I feel like overeating. That will still happen, especially in an uncomfortable place. Like, let's say I go to a party, and there's all this food around, and I don't really know the people, and I feel uncomfortable. And will I go back to my old ways of just stuffing my face because I don't know what else to do with myself at the party? You know, I have more awareness now. But, you know, at a weak moment, you could go back to your old ways. What comes to me are these thoughts, like, is it your body that's hungry or your soul? These are the things that pop up into my brain now. And it's really, it's, you know, it's that lower brainstem, the amygdala, is telling you to go and eat. And when you go up and you just have a thought like that, is it my body that's hungry or my soul? Right away, you have ignited your prefrontal cortex and it's thinking higher thoughts. So another way to do that I learned, this is so interesting, is that by picking up the orange and focusing on its amazing sensory qualities, you are right at that moment taking your mind out of the brainstem and into the prefrontal cortex. Just by focusing on the beautiful qualities, you're admiring it with gratitude. And that, even just by doing that, you are taking yourself away from that binge state of feeling frantically that you need more of that food to stuff into you, because you're recognizing, oh, how beautiful this is. And right away, you've moved the neurons to start firing in a whole different place. And as you do that, you create new neural pathways. And the first times you do it, it feels strange. Just like if you drive over a road that hasn't been paved yet. But once you've created those grooves, it becomes more and more natural to experience life with gratitude that way, and easier. So that's how you create the new habits over time of appreciating all these natural, wonderful pleasures that exist in everybody's life. We're all breathing. We all have parts of our body that work. We have infinite amount of things to be grateful for right this very moment. And to refocus ourselves in that way is valuable to everybody. We all have problems. We all have challenges. But it's that focus that nourishes our soul to have more strength to really overcome the challenges.
You also did something else, which you demonstrated curiosity. Why am I drawn towards that food like a magnet? What's going on with me? Like, you know, inherent in this example is, hey, am I uncomfortable? Do I feel awkward with these people? And by being curious rather than critical, by being curious about why, not focusing on that, like, why do I want to do that rather than I won't do it, that can also create so much more understanding, and insight is the first step to creating change.
Beautiful, beautiful. And just try to celebrate every tiny victory. Just think, whatever I overate, I could have overeaten even more. So that you get into a place of celebration. Just keep on celebrating your life. Yes.
So if you could go back in time to the, you start this book, you know, how old are you? You're pretty young.
Almost 12. I was just turning 12. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you could go back to talk to yourself at the age of 12, what would you say to yourself now?
Well, the thing I didn't know is that I was a spiritual being. all the talk was about being a body, you know, and you should look this way and get thinner, and that's how to get a boyfriend. And I talk in the book, I show the confusion I was going through. I would read these women's magazines. It would talk all about the latest diet. And then the next page was the recipe for a strawberry shortcake. And I was like, what am I supposed to be doing? Who am I supposed to be? There was so much confusion. And confusion just itself can lead a person down this path. You know, I was so confused about life. So now I would say, I would love to give over. And that's what I'm doing. That's why I write the children's books. I want to reach the youngest people so they don't have to go through unnecessary pain. There's plenty of pain in life. We all have pain that challenges us to become better people. But there's unnecessary pain. I feel like we don't have to go through all that if we have a clear understanding of what we're here for and how to have a more joyful life from the very, very beginning.
And when we are more supportive of ourselves, more loving, more compassionate, more curious, and all of those things, we don't put up with people who treat us poorly. When we're mean to ourselves and someone else comes along and is mean to us, we tolerate it. Such as the boyfriend that you call Michael, who once said to you, you know, I really like thinner types.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch.
Exactly.
With him, because that his voice was your voice.
Yes. It penetrated very deeply and it hurt terribly.
Yeah.
And I worked hard to become the thin person that he wanted, you know, really a body type that wasn't mine, because I'm blessed with certain a body type. It was not what he was looking for. This very athletic type, he explained to me, and that's not who I was. Yes.
And how painful that someone would essentially shame you just for having a different physicality than what his preference was and make you feel bad about yourself.
Well, again, you know, he was, that's what I liked about him, that he was very open and expressive. I don't think he was, you know, purposely being abusive to me. I really didn't feel that way. I was attracted to the fact that he was open about what he was saying. And it wasn't just him, of course. The messages were in so many places about that you had to look a certain way to be attractive. And I absorbed those messages. You know, I absorbed many different messages about how to be successful too. And I was very grateful, actually, that I got to Harvard, got to what I thought was the tippy top, and felt, nothing much up here that I really want, you know? I felt, because many people go after these illusions for years and years, and it's a huge waste of our time and effort when we could be becoming really good people, really joyful, good people, not wasting time going after illusions, whether it's a body type or fame or wealth or power. That's really not what joy in life is all about.
No, my brother went to Harvard, so I know what you're talking about. Oh, yes, I know. And, you know, going to Harvard or getting or becoming a doctor, because, you know, you're supposed to either be a doctor or a lawyer, right? as a nice Jewish girl, I can tell you, those are the messages by my two professor parents, a doctor, a lawyer, a professor. That's it. Okay, I digress. But to be able to own what is it that is right for you, which is also your story, and how you departed from that when you followed your spiritual path.
Yes.
And really, you know, took a very different direction than what your parents, let's say, were expecting.
Yes, it was really a wild thing to do, but it didn't seem wild at the time. It was clear to me. I didn't want to go on suffering. It looked like I had this great successful life on the outside, when inside it was nothing like that. And I didn't want to live with that emptiness anymore. So I went on a whole different path. And I guess you could say I'm still involved in healing. I wanted to become a psychiatrist. I went, and I'm still involved in the mind-body connection. I just went on a different path, more focused on how do we heal our hungry souls and also focused on helping children from the very beginning of life. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, 41 books. 41 books, people. 41. 41 books for children. I mean, so you kind of combine on your, you know, your pleasure ladder, love, meaningfulness, and creativity all in one.
Yes, all five levels, I'm telling you, because like some of my books, they deal with the prevention of abuse, they deal with healthy eating for children, they deal with learning disabilities, even let's swim safely. Because having a healthy body is such an important part of letting our souls shine fully. And so I want to address the whole person. That's really what it's about. And just help people to have as joyful a life as they can have. And they don't have to play catch up like I had to play and so many other people have to play for many years in their life. If they know these tools from the beginning of life. Yeah.
And you really, despite how accomplished, how smart, how accomplished you were, Harvard, and I know you got into lots of, you had your pick of the Ivies, I know, things like that. Despite all of that, like you said, reading the magazines, which give the message, which the diet industry does as well, which sells the illusion that if only you look like this, you will be happy. If only you would
exactly.
Choose this number on the scale, you will be worthy.
Exactly. And really, we are the ones who can bring happiness into our lives. Nobody else. That is really the secret. I want to tell you this other book I wrote, Don't Read This Book, is one of my newest books. It's about recognizing, like you say, with curiosity, that voice in our head that's telling us to do the things we have a bad habit of doing, you know? And it's recognizing it. Even young children can become aware of it and use the tools. I think I saw you gave a show on this. Use the tools to your own advantage. The same techniques that voice, the derogatory voice in your head is using, use it to do good things. Like, it'll say to you, oh, just have one little piece of cake, no big deal. And you say to yourself, oh, I know, that's a good technique. Okay, so when I don't feel like getting up this morning. I'm just going to stretch a little bit. That feels good. I'll stretch a little more. You know, you can laugh about it. You can use the same techniques. Another thing it does is say to you, you'll be happy if you just get that one thing. And you go, oh, that's you again. I can be happy with what I have right now. Because once I get that thing, it's not going to last that long. I want something else. So developing my gratitude skills, that's what's going to give me lasting joy in life. You use these abilities, you recognize that voice, and you play around with it in a joyful way. You don't even have to take it to, oh, it's you again. I get it. If we can teach this to children early on, it's a whole different life. And this book took me 30 years to write because I didn't have the ending. I said, the voice still seems kind of mean and scary. The children, it's not good. Then I realized the ending. It took me so many years to get this. I realized that voice, it doesn't really want you to listen to it. It wants you to overcome it. It's there inside of everybody. We all have it. It's this natural voice. Like, it's like a weight to lift off. That's how we develop our gratitude muscles. Pushing off that voice in our heads. And we can all do it. And we all have that voice. And it can become a real, tremendous pleasure to do it. So that's what I realized, that too is given to us as a gift. And when we recognize that, we can talk in a friendly way to the voice and just celebrate the victory every single time we push it off a little bit.
And there's something that you referenced a little bit obliquely, which is playfulness.
Yes.
Right? So that, like, having more of a playful attitude, because with a bully, when a voice is bullying you, I remember in grad school, there was this one person who bullied me, and yeah. I was talking to my analyst about this, and I tried every way, like I had a conversation with this guy, and I had this and that. And finally, she just said, next time he does it, because he did this thing, just say, oh, stop it. Just cut it out. And I was like, oh, and I did.
Yes.
And that's when he stopped bothering me as much. And that's what you're talking about. Sort of like have a playful attitude towards this voice instead of making it this big giant thing. Make it like a little voice with a big shadow.
Exactly.
And we're afraid of the shadow.
Exactly. It really wants you to succeed. Isn't that amazing? And you have the infinite power within you to do that. That's so amazing. And every time you fail, because you're going to always be failing, we always fail in life. That's why we're here. If we weren't failing, we would not still be here. We have a mission here. We're going to keep falling. I love this. What's the difference between a real diamond and a fake diamond? You know, a real diamond has flaws. We are real diamonds. We all have flaws. That's what we're here to work on. You'll fall back, you'll fall down, but that's all part of it. Just celebrate whatever you did, that you didn't fall down as hardly, that you didn't feel as much shame this time, that you're learning to celebrate. And that's it. Yeah.
I love it. It's so inspiring because the same thing is happening. It's just when we change our meaning, when we change the interpretation,
yes.
If we fall down and say, oh, you know, I failed. And by the way, when babies learn to walk and they fall down, nobody says, oh my God, that baby's never going to learn to walk. That baby's a failure. I thought that baby could walk, but no, we say, come on, baby, you did great. You took two steps, get up. And then to ourselves, we fall down and say, oh my God, we failed. And then you personalize it. I'm a failure, rather than, hey, took two steps before you fell down. That's great.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yesterday, I watched my grandson try to get on the banister of the staircase. Now, I mean, who needs to get on a banister? But for him, it was important. He tried at least 20 times. Oh, my gosh. He just kept falling off. And he finally got on. I was like, wow, do we do this? It's so great. He's 4 years old. He has no thought of giving up, you know? Just going to keep trying.
Well, he's lucky enough to have a grandmother, and I'm sure, you know, parents who were raised by his grandmother, or one of them was anyway, who instilled that kind of sense of possibility and perseverance and hope. And just like you're essentially saying, think the best of yourself instead of the worst.
Yes, yes. And thank you for saying that. But I want to say every single person has that resilience in them. We all have this infinite amount of joy and beauty. It's all in there. And each person's light is shining brilliantly and differently, completely. Each person has a uniquely beautiful light.
Okay, so let me throw you a curveball. What if someone is listening or watching either now or later, and they say, well, yeah, that might be true of other people, but I don't feel the light. I feel bad about myself.
That's why. Where is my flashlight? Oh, here it is. That's why. You feel no light. Look how dark it is. This is the darkness. I felt this too. I remember exactly. I did not want to live another day. In that memoir, I talk about it. That's it. I have given up. You just don't want to go on with, even with that life I had, I wasn't interested. It felt completely meaningless, purposeless. The binge eating was taking over my entire life, and it was a horrible way to live. And you feel like darkness. You feel like a nothing, but it's not the reality. The reality is there is complete resilience, and you've seen it. I'm sure you've known people that have had such abusive childhoods. They've gone through tremendous trauma, and they still have that resilience and they still could rise above it and move on to help other people too in their lives. It's amazing. It's possible for every single one of us. Yeah.
So to just recognize that even though you may feel that you're in the dark, the light is there. You have to have some faith, some trust that you can find it.
Yes.
And then go on a search for it.
Yes. Yes. That changes everything. That wisdom changes everything. And we have so much knowledge in this world. We're like flooded with knowledge, but we're still starving for wisdom. Simple wisdom in life that really helps us. Yes.
We live so often in a world that's so surface. You know, I can't tell you how many times I go to lunch and I'm early, or I can hear people talking and they're talking about what they're, here are these people justifying what they're ordering. Or saying, oh, I'm only going to order a salad, I'm going to be good. Or, oh, I totally worked out, so I can order this. Instead of having a deeper, more meaningful, more connected conversation about something, anything other than what they're eating and why they have the right to eat that. And when we discover your pleasure ladder, right? When we discover the pleasure of connecting with others, of defining ourselves not by what we weigh, but by who we are, things really change.
Yes. Our thoughts become our prison, you know, and when that's what it's all about, it just becomes a very, very narrow place where we can't really experience all these other pleasures in life. We create a life of scarcity when really there is an abundance of blessings in everybody's life right this moment. It's a question of developing the awareness of that, the recognition of all the goodness in your life right now. And let's say a person's in an abusive situation. Like you said, the more we nourish our souls, the more right that feels, the more we are able to get out of abusive situations, not tolerate that, because we understand our own worthiness. The more we recognize our worthiness, we can get out of situations that are not right for us. Yes.
Yeah, our thoughts are indeed can be our prison, and our thoughts can also break us free from that prison.
Yes.
It's so powerful to remember our power, and for you to go from writing that poem is like to where you are now. Oh, thank you, Sarah. Oh. She said, your podcast and books have changed my life, and I cannot thank you enough. Oh, you just made my day.
So wonderful. And I also love how you have spoken about what the different types of food, how they try to fill that emptiness, like potato chips, something crunchy to get out your anger, or the sweetness and chocolate because you want more sweetness in your life. You know, there are so many other ways to bring that sweetness into your life, or to bring the excitement in if you're bored, you know, and to grow out of that anger too. There's ways to recognize the anger, face the anger, and also nourish your soul while you're doing it. It's so important while you are, if you're getting support from in a therapeutic situation, in addition, keep nourishing that soul so that you don't have to be entwined in another person's bad habit that can pull you down as well. The more you are really feeding your soul, then you will be able to have the strength to create new mindsets in your life and experience so much more joy. Yeah.
Well, Braca, you are the embodiment of everything that you are talking about today, everything that you write about. This is the book. If you're watching, this is the book. Please tell people where they can find you, where they can get this book, and where they can get, you know, the 41 or maybe now 42 others, including Don't Read This Book, which now, of course, I have to read that book. How can we find you?
Yeah, it's a big joy that my youngest, up until now, I guess it was the first 39 books were all published by regular publishers. And when my last book, oh, that was Let's Stay Healthy. When I wrote the manuscript during the pandemic, my children said, stop sending your books to publishers. We are becoming a publishing company now. So my youngest children have become a publishing company. They publish my latest books. And that's it. So if you go to their website, you'll make their lives so happy too. They'll be thrilled. So I'm promoting that website. The getsbookshop.com is what they're doing. They're a bookshop and a publishing company, GOETZ, and they have all my books you can get from them, and yeah.
And wonderful, and it will also be in the notes, because this, as you know, the live show is also later made into a podcast for Apple Podcasts and other places, Dream Vision 7 Radio, different places so other people will be able to hear your inspiring advice and experience and also find you and make you and your kids very happy. Thank you so much for coming on the show. You are truly inspiring, and you are the like I said, the walking embodiment of everything that you talk about. It we can feel it just hearing you, listening to you, watching you, good for you. I would want to say to that 12-year-old, you know what? You're going to go through some very difficult times, but one day you are going to inspire so many people and come out of this, and you're going to be the happiest you've ever been.
Oh,
so thank you again, Raka. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. You're helping so many people. Thank you.
Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.